Welcome to CX Nexus, a podcast for customer experience professionals who want to level up their careers and their business. We're here to explore how collaboration, cooperation, and community can help your organization thrive. Each episode, we're going to have a lively conversation with professionals across a wide variety of roles to explore what they do, where they've found success, and to share the best lessons they've learned so that you can too. And who are we? We're two experienced community professionals who believe that collaboration is the key to success. We worked at companies large and small, building user communities and connecting with teams and users across the business. And we want to bring the conversations that we've had with our partners to you. Hello, and welcome to CX Nexus, the podcast where we explore the connection between community and all parts of the customer experience. I'm one of your co-hosts, Nicole Saunders, here along with
Chris Stetzel.
Hey, Chris, how are you today?
I'm really good. Nice, sunny in Dallas, nice and warm, and it's almost the weekend, so that's exciting.
That's exciting. I'm very much looking forward to this weekend as well. We're celebrating my brother's 40th birthday. Sorry to out you, John. We're going to have a party, so it's going to be a good time. We are joined today with our guest, Jay Nathan, who is the new Chief Operating Officer at Churnkey. Jay, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Glad to be on with y'all. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you as well.
Yeah, it's good to see you, man. It really hasn't been all that long since I've talked on the place. Thanks for coming. And one of the things that I know you're really good at, you've been dealing with customers, upsell, cross-sell, sales, you've been in everything. And so before we start getting into our topic today, I probably should ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, your background, and would love to hear more about that.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me. And I love what you all are doing here because having been in a community software company, I know how important it is to integrate community with the other parts of the business. Is actually what makes it work, really, is when you have buy-in from customer success and product and support and even sales and marketing. So
that's right.
I love what you guys are doing.
Thank you.
You are welcome. The way I describe my career is a goat path. I've gone a bunch of different angles and I finally condensed it down after hearing somebody else do something similar. I was an engineer starting out, turned professional services leader, turned product leader, turned customer success leader, turned general manager. So I've gone through a bunch of different things. I've worked in a bunch of different areas within, all within SaaS companies for the most part, SaaS and professional services organizations. And it's given me a lot of breadth and perspective on different parts of the organization. Even when I was in services in my early jobs, or even in engineering, I always talked with people outside of my group. And I feel like it always made me better. I understood them a little better and I could integrate with what they were doing a little bit better. They understood me a little bit better. So I think that's maybe the golden thread that's run through all those different types of experiences that I've had in SaaS over the years, is that it's just all about blurring the lines between the functional groups, because departments are a necessary evil, right? And most companies, they're not actually good for the customer. See that manifest as companies get bigger and bigger. But anyway, I digress. We could talk more about that later. But yeah, that's a little bit about my background. Today I am the Chief Operating Officer at Churnkey, which is, we have a retention platform for high volume subscription businesses like SaaS companies that do PLG and consumer services and entertainment and media and that kind of thing as well.
Awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So I'll get it going. So on today's topic, and Nicole and I have been doing some of this year, for me, for sure, it's a big responsibility around, I still own community, but also thinking about the upsell or cross sell within a product company, right? And I'm working heavily with sales, marketing. I'm on the marketing team. I report to CMO and at our company, but I've been tasked to say, you know, look, expansion is a big key and we've got to figure out how to move those interactions, engagements. And let's back up. One of our bigger strategies is around ABX. So account-based experience. Kate, I don't know if you know what that is, but basically at the end of the day, from a net new standpoint, it's really about the interactions that are going on in an account. Instead of going after one person, our threshold is three. So if three people from one account is doing something, then we have our BDRs to go after them. And then there's a whole automated net new play for all those accounts. We use some other stuff that detects different signals and stuff like that. But then this year we're going around now thinking, all right, we have the net new and ABX stuff. How do we now look at the expansion piece? And so in my mind, when you think about online communities, for example, and this is just one play, it's one channel, we have all kinds of engagement when you think about logging into the platform, when you think about asking questions, answering questions, downloading PDFs, coming to a community webinar, show, whatever, and going deep into the product, and then things like that. So now we're starting to look at those. Point is, how do you think about you've been a CCO in the past, mm-hmm. and thinking about that customer engagement and thinking about the expansion piece. How do you think about that? What's your thoughts?
You want to know an interesting statistic, and Nicole, I bet you could share some stories from Zendesk as well, but 75% of Salesforce.com's revenue growth this year will come from their customer base. It won't come from the new customers, because as a company gets larger, and you see how large Salesforce is, tens of billions of dollars a year in revenue, but you have to start selling multiple products and you have to start harvesting opportunity out of your customer base. It's so much less expensive to do that because you don't have the marketing overhead of going to attract attention and interest from people who don't know who you are yet. And so this is a really important concept, not just for the teams who own those quotas and those accountabilities for expansion. It's an important concept for the entire business, because especially where we find ourselves now, what's happened over the past 4 years is that you've had this giant run-up in valuations of software companies, right? We've all been in it. We've all seen it.
Yeah.
And now that's come crashing back down to earth when interest rates went up 525 basis points between fall of 2022 and 2023, August of 2023, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It changed the game a little bit because money wasn't as free-flowing anymore. And so what that meant was everybody's getting smarter about their budgets. They're tightening up. CFOs have more power. And when that happens, growth slows. And when growth slows, profitability becomes more important. And so now that we're in this profitable, efficient growth mode, we have to be working more closely with our customers. So if you have multiple products, you have to be really figuring out how to go take those products to your customers first and then to the rest of the market to drive that expansion. I don't know if I veered off your question, Detzel, but that's the backdrop that we're all dealing with right now. And to the extent that you have additional products to sell, that it is critical right now to do that to drive growth.
I think you make some great points in there, Jay. You called out that sort of industry rule, which is that it is much more efficient and much cheaper to expand a business with an existing customer than it is to acquire a new one. And of course, you always have to have the balance because existing customers will churn over time, and you always have to have some new people coming in. But it is critical, especially when you're trying to be really efficient, try to get to profitability, to be able to sell into your existing customer base. And as you said, it's important to every part of the business, because it's not just about selling into that customer base, making sure they're realizing value, but also making sure your product team is helping to reduce friction with the product and make sure that it's serving the existing customer base's needs. It's making sure that those customers can get the support and the help that they need, and they can connect with other people that can talk to them about all of that. And so that's where there's so many great intersections between community and some of those other parts of the business.
When you think of the expansion pieces, what do you think about, like, how do you not just operationalize it, but how do you start selling that? Is it whose responsibility is it? You could say, hey, it's everybody's responsibility, but in some companies, it's the AE's responsibility, it's the CSM's responsibilities. How do you start thinking about who owns that piece? And then how do you start getting them to think about working with others within the company?
Yeah, to both of your points, expansion really is the thing that is going to move the needle, not just for the company, but for the customer too. I had an interesting conversation just this morning. I'll veer off for just a second, then I'll come back to your question, Chris.
Okay.
And this friend of mine was basically talking through the concept of gross retention being the target for a customer success team or any existing customer base. That's fine. But here's the problem with having that as your North Star. Gross retention, let's define that first. Gross retention is keeping the existing customers and revenue that you have at the beginning of a period to the end of a period. Basically, forget about what you add, forget about new business coming in. It's just all about your existing customer base and the existing revenue base. Well, the cold hard reality of our industry is that all the customers that we bring in are not necessarily part of our ideal client profile, meaning they have things that make them not a perfect fit for our products.
Yeah.
If we're doing everything in our power to make product adjustments, to go save those customers, we're actually, and I didn't come up with this. This is my friend, Dan Sparing, who was brilliantly articulated this to me this morning, in fact, so I'm glad I could talk about it. But he's, you're getting pulled off of your product market fit all the time if you're only focused on gross retention. But when you're talking about expansion, then you have an opportunity to add more value to the customer, to give them additional capabilities that they need, and really building towards something you want to be building to as a company. Anyway, that just a side note there. I think having an expansion motion is more than just growing ARR. It's actually about continuing to move your company down the path of the platform and the product that you want to be in the long run. How do you operationalize expansion? I think the way that a lot of companies look at it, there's really only a handful of models out there, right? You either have account executives that run like a key accounts team where they own the initial sale and they own any expansion that comes afterward. Then you might have more of the traditional, you know, what we would all think of as more of the traditional account executive model where they do the new business portion. And as soon as that deal's closed, it's handed off. Maybe they keep the deal for 12 months or keep the account in their name for 12 months until, you know, they have the opportunity to go drive some of that expansion. If they don't drive expansion within that time period, then it might transition over to an account manager who would also be living in sales, but is responsible for any expansions, potentially renewals as well. Then you've got a flavor of account management that is clearly renewals and expansion. I was actually talking to a CRO yesterday, and he implemented that model. His account management team owns both the renewal and the expansion. And I asked him this question. I said, did you have the right people on your team to implement that model? He said, no, we had to replace the whole team to be able to do that because they had account managers that thought like hunters and they just wanted to go harvest deals out of the customer base. Wrong mindset, right? Because you can't treat your customers like you should treat all customers the same and prospects, in my opinion, but you really can't treat your paying customers as if they're just another transaction to you. That's a recipe for disaster. And then you've
there's a quote right there.
Yeah,
a critical point. You can't treat people like transactions. You have to remember that you're dealing with real human beings in every part of these interactions.
That's right. And you know, some of those human beings you already have a relationship with contractually, you want to place. Now, then you have the customer success model, which is you've got CSMs who are more product experts. They're going to be making sure that the customer's getting the value out of the product that they need. But in a lot of cases, what they're doing is not owning that expansion motion per se, but they're identifying the opportunity and then they're feeding that into the sales channel to go drive it. Now,
yeah, I think that's right.
More and more CSM teams are taking on that account management role. And I think it's a good fit, actually, because the reality is a lot of what customer success teams do today, I have a whole diatribe on this, so we can get
sure of it.
But what I see a lot of customer success teams doing today is actually white glove support. It's not customer success as I define it. And I think if that's the case, and you just need a bigger support team, you need a better support team. Put that there, maybe even a premier support offering so that you can have this clear separation of people who service the product and who help the customer get it right. And then you have people who sell things and manage the relationship with the customer.
I have one little thing is I think support is underrated. And I think that it's probably one of the hardest jobs. And I don't think a lot of companies do it well. And the last thing I'll say is, that if you do it, that's half the battle. If you had amazing support, I think that the company can go a long ways in those renewals and things like that. Yeah, all the other things matter too, but I'm just saying, I've seen so many companies just suck at support. You know what I mean? And it's just, and it's a big deal, and you can't get people to invest in it because you'll have these people that are, they're good people, but they're young and they don't know if you have this enterprise software kind of stuff that is super technical, how are they going to know? So it's just interesting.
And then there's always like that challenge with support where it's, even the best trained agent probably haven't done the thing that the customer is trying to do before. So they've maybe seen examples of it. They've read up on the technical documentation. They can tell you the settings that you need to implement to do it. And I think that's where all of these customer relationships come in, whether you're doing that through a community or customer references or stories, but being able to actually get users talking to each other to understand those pieces and help build those relationships. Because Jay, I don't know what your experience has been, but most of the companies that I have worked at or been really familiar with, they only have customer support managers for their biggest account. And then there's a whole segment of a customer base where you're trying to do some kind of like scaled or digital success. And that's where I think those user to user relationships can help augment the brand to user relationship and continue to build that, right?
I'll give one example. I sent a support case to a company a few weeks ago, and I said, hey, I need an approach on how to do this from your APIs and blah, 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 blah. And the email I got back was, here's the API documentation. I'm like, that's not helpful.
That doesn't help me know how to do that, right?
That wasn't a company I used to work for, was it, Chris?
No comment. I'm just saying, it just pissed me off more than anything. But it's not just that, but it's just, I think if you have good support or they can help you get what you need, I think that's a big part, a big plus in an organization like ours and yours and others.
Almost any organization, right? If you want to be able to bring it back to the expansion.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's great because it all ties together.
It does.
You know, this is where we talk about blurring the lines, right? It all ties together. But if people aren't getting a good experience and don't know how to really take advantage of what they've already bought from you, do you think they really want to buy more from you? No, mm-hmm. No. And then Nicole, to your point, if you can find a way, of course, everybody has to have, people I think have tried to get away from the idea of having a support team for a long time. And I think customer success has come in and from the side and maybe disrupted that a little bit, but having a great support team allows you to do a lot of things. And if you have a community that's sitting on top of it, you get together, then if a question comes up in public and there's a question about a certain capability or trying to do a certain task with the software that gets asked in front of everybody or in the community itself, then other customers are going to come in and say, yeah, they have a product that does what you're asking about. You need to buy that. And that's where the community lends itself to expansion. That's where some of those leads might come from. But other than that, of course, in these scaled methodologies and with your support team, which I count as a scaled methodology for customer service, customer support, customer success, one of the big things that these teams need to be doing is looking for those opportunities to expand with the customer and identify.
That's right.
And then teeing it up. And the way that is operationalized, to come all the way back to your question, is really through an internal lead generation system of some sort. I was with a company called Blackbaud, big software nonprofit software company, $1 billion in revenue a year. And I was there from 2005 to 2013, almost 2014. We had a really robust internal lead program where anybody from support to professional services to the sales team got paid on the deals, but anybody could get a spiff for sending a lead in where they saw a need that the customer had, that we had a product that would fit it, and you could get comped for that. That's important that everybody be on the lookout for it.
Yes. I think if I look at the operationalization of all of that stuff, I think it's, for us, it's bigger, right? As you grow, things have to become, when you're a very small company, everybody's just trying to go sell some stuff and make sure there's a product. But when I look at, like, I'll give an example since I'm doing this today. When I look at community, and I think, as we all know, community engages our users. We answer questions. We do different programs to connect them and all of these things. And one of the things I think is important as a community leader is operationalizing that and then showing the business outcomes of what the community is doing from either net new, cross, for me, it's net new and expansion, right? And the big play for me is expansion, and a smaller play, which maybe that grows over time, is net new. But there's still opportunity in both and actually proving it out and showing it. So like example, and Nicole's heard me talk about this 1,000 times, but one of the biggest programs that I have from a getting people together is my community show program or webinar program. And what that does is on a weekly basis-ish, we sometimes go deep into the product, show people how to use it, do all these things because we're an enterprise company and there's lots of opportunity to teach them and getting others together and say, I've done this and that, and getting access to the experts and things like that. But since I've been doing that for almost 3 years, now there's an opportunity to, Reltio is growing and we want to grow in our expansion pieces. We're coming up with some new products or doing some upsells, cross sells. So why not on those shows show the new product, right? Hey, this is going to do this thing and this is what's really cool. And so that's an upsell opportunity. Now I had 100 people show up for one upsell like live. And then that goes directly into goes into our Zoom, right? And then it goes into Salesforce. Every opportunity that's already open or opens, that user goes directly and is pushed to the opportunity. And then it pushes into Tableau. And then I can say, our community shows are 30 million or generating an influence pipeline, $30 million. And not just that, it then also says a BDR or a renewal rep or whatever can go into our dashboard and say, you know what? There's these opportunities open and these five people or three people from company A, B, and C that's already a customer have went to a community show, they downloaded this thing and they did all this stuff. So there might be time for us to go and, you know, especially if they went. So my thinking is operationalizing these things are important over time, or at least to have a plan. So as a community leader, no longer is it enough for us to build content, build engagement programs, and all those things. Although it's still our job, how do we get it up there? I said a lot of stuff there, and it's really just.
I think that you're spot on. The irony of the community, in my opinion, is that it almost feels like it could be a little insular, right? Nobody else.
I mean, we're here to break that down. That's exactly why we're expanding beyond the community space in our conversation, because we do have to break it down. And I think you're right, Jay. It can be a little bit like our own special, unique thing, instead of being like, hey, we're part of all of the business. But continue with your thought, please.
No, like you're exactly right. If you feel like everybody else doesn't understand you, that means you probably don't understand everybody else. Right. By the way, I'll say the same thing about customer success people. You can say the same thing about marketing people.
Everything.
Everybody gets the blinders on, right? Salespeople, nobody understands how hard our job is.
Well, and especially when you get, you're under pressure, you're low on resources, you're busy. Yeah. I constantly see teams that are trying to put boundaries around their work so that they're not constantly overwhelmed and behind, but as a result, end up being very focused on their OKR, their work, their process. And there's a tendency to want to pull back from collaboration because you have to go slower, right? It's that thing of if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go further, go with other people. But I totally butchered that thing, but you got it. But people tend to want to do that. And I'm like, I'm constantly, I know in my own team, for myself, across my organization, pushing people like, hey, I know it's going to slow us down a little bit, but if we can connect those dots, we can share resources. It will be better for the customer experience. We can connect the dots between all those things. And I'm constantly harping on don't ship your org chart, by which I mean, don't put out a program because it meets your OKR. If there's another team that's doing almost exactly the same thing, join forces.
Yep.
Lend your OKRs together, whatever you got to do. But bring that together. Don't silo it off so much.
Ship your org chart. That's my quotable quote for you.
There you go.
Yeah.
So Jay, you know, as we're talking about these things, what are some of the things that you would encourage teams to think about or how to put this in action? Because like, it's one thing for us to say, hey guys, don't put your blinders on. Don't silo yourself. Don't ship your org chart. What does that look like in practice? And how would you recommend people think about that?
Yeah, I've got a recommendation for somebody else I think you all should talk to on your podcast.
Okay. Good. We're looking for our next guest. Hey,
there you go. Nisha Bakshi from Gong.
Yes. She's having coffee with her next week.
Okay, good. Yeah. You know her. She's the master at this kind of thing. But what you're really doing is, I believe that probably 50 to 70% of a community manager's job is internal change management and bringing the organization along with you, because you can't, as a community leader, you cannot do it all yourself. You actually need a small army of people with the product knowledge, the industry knowledge. That's how you make a community valuable, right? By bringing together all that knowledge in one place. And usually the community manager is a facilitator, which is what makes the job really hard, right? You have to be a good influencer versus somebody who controls everything. And Chris, I'm sure you've picked up a ton of domain knowledge over the past 3 years.
Sure.
I see you all the time on LinkedIn. You're pulling in people from your company to do webinars. You're pulling customers in. My business partner, we started a customer success community years ago, and it was called Gain, Grow, Retain, and still run by Higher Logic, by the way. If you're in CS or community, go join it. It's great. But we always used to call it be the DJ, not the talent, because You can't be the talent. You have to be the person that brings it all together, the facilitator. And that's hard work because you're dealing with people. So,
yeah. And you see all these community teams that are talking about they're under-resourced, they're a team of one or two. And yet, I know I sat down last week and I made a list of all the capabilities that I needed on my team. And I'm like, this is a small business, right? I need people that can write copy, that can put events together, that can do technical administration, that can do analysis and reporting, that have executive communication, like all of these skill sets. And it really brought home that point to me of you're never going to staff all of that within your team, right? No business is going to build out an entire sub-business within the organization. Very few are, maybe with the exception of something like the size of Salesforce. And that is why it is so critical to work cross-functionally and lean into those other resources, because you're not going to get it all on a community team. It wouldn't make sense from a business perspective. It makes a ton more sense to have a community team serve as a center of excellence, but then work across the organization to implement everything and really get it all done.
Yeah. And how, like, what's in it for them, right? How do you incentivize people to be part of it? And so you have to think through those things. If you want to enlist their help, they have a day job, right? Now, this could be part of their day job if you do it right. One of the things I've seen, actually, even back to my Blackbaud days, we had at Blackbaud what I would consider one of the most robust knowledge bases I have ever seen in my life. And that's because 400 person support team, part of their incentive structure was everybody, no matter how junior, you were held accountable to creating knowledge based content based on the kind of stuff you were fielding on the phone. And guess what? That knowledge base was huge as a result. I think you could build incentives in, you could build requirements in, but you have to go collaborate with the leaders in those departments to say, hey, this is important to the business that we build this out. How do we make it part of, how can we make it both an incentive for your team to participate and a requirement for your team to participate in a way that aligns with the work that they do on a day-to-day basis? And that's where you get leverage. So community can be a huge leverage point as long as it's not in a little silo.
Yeah. And in this case, expansion, and kind of going back to the expansion piece, if you have a team, which I'm sure you've had people report into you, several different companies, but what's your, hey, look, we need to go and expand in these accounts. Maybe what is your thing to them? What are you saying to them to really, what is like a strategy look like around that? If you were to do that.
Questions. Very tactically, the first thing you have to do if you're going to go expand, and by the way, somebody should be doing this work in your organization. And if they're not, and you're a community leader, and you think there's a valuable opportunity there, then maybe you can help spearhead some of this. But the first thing to do is go get a list of your customers and understand where there is expansion opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. When you go to sell into the market.
Love that.
You have to qualify any prospect you talk to, like the product that we're selling at the company I'm at today, Churnkey. We sell to a lot of SaaS companies, but if there's some conditions that if you're not meeting those conditions or those criteria, then you're actually not a prospect for us. So we need to figure that out very quickly. You do the same thing with your customers, right? You have product A, which the customer already uses. And then you have product B. Is that a fit for the customer or not? And then what is the universe of customers where that could be a fit? How do you go put that product in front of them? You do campaigns, right? Through your marketing efforts. You set up webinars to help people understand what those capabilities are. And you can aim them directly at your customers. If you use product A and you have this problem, then come check out product B, right? I think it gets very tactical very quickly. A lot of times people confuse strategy and execution, and they're really thing, right? Mm. We plan to win. We have this huge segment of customers that doesn't have product B. How do we go get their attention and start talking to them about product B and then generate pipeline from that? I think it all starts with the data. You have to actually look at your customer base in detail and then understand what cohorts you have. When I was at HireLogic, we had a lot of different products. And one of the things that we did, and actually our chief product officer spearheaded this effort at the time, but he looked at all the different cohorts of customers that we had by their product attachment, where they had our flagship products, where they had other products. Yeah. But once you know what the attachment is of the different product sets, then you can figure out, okay, what else do these customers need? What is the same about this block of customers, and how do we go market and sell a product to them in a way that feels like you're marketing to a customer, not a prospect?
You sound like an executive, man. I love it. This is exactly, a lot of that stuff you just said is exactly what we've been doing this year and really focusing on. So I love what you just said. So.
Well, Jay, this has been insightful. I feel like we've all had some great takeaways. I'm going to throw a little curveball at you. This
is all right.
A new podcast. We're still playing around a little bit with our format, but I would love to ask you just like some quick questions to wrap up if I could. All right. So I know I love reading books that help me think about work in different ways, not necessarily business books. You have one book title that you would recommend that people should read to help them out, whatever their profession or life looks like.
I have one book that I have been recommending a lot lately. It's called Good Strategy, Bad Strategy. And it's for this whole idea of like your plan to win and the execution behind it. So I'll leave it at that. But Good Strategy,
All right. We'll put that in the show notes for people as well if you want to track that down. And then what is one like habit or ritual or process that you have figured out that really helps make your days easier or more productive?
One of the things I like to do is write. If you want to be good at anything, you should just do it every day. Do it 10, 20, 30, 60 minutes a day. And for me, for writing, I try to write something every single day. I don't know that it makes me more productive, but actually the one thing I will say about writing, if you do choose to do writing, is it clarifies your thinking. When you actually try to get your thoughts out of your head and you put them in black and white so that you can see, and you actually have to think about it clearly enough to actually put it down into words, it will change you. It'll change the way you think. And so
is writing still a thing? Because we can do all that stuff, right?
But it can't think for you. That's the one thing it can't do, Chris. And I love that. I'll tell you, I free write. Anytime I'm trying to solve a difficult problem, I just open up a blank Word doc and I just start typing what I'm thinking and bulleting things out. And half the time, that's the basis for an executive brief I end up doing a few weeks later or something like that. So I'm with you. I agree.
Pro tip here. If you want to do a great presentation, don't start with PowerPoint slides. Start with narrative of what you're trying to say. And then it'll be very easy to create once you have that narrative outlined.
Because they're just the pictures that go along with the thing you wrote down, right? They're just, we'll give the example.
Exactly.
All right. Chris, you have any quick questions you want to ask Jay before we wrap up here?
I don't. This has been really great, Jay, and I didn't write any crazy questions down, so I apologize. It's always a pleasure to have you and always a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you so much for always being so flexible and not just flexible, but just willingness to come on to stuff like this. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I appreciate what y'all are doing and look forward to watching this one grow. And I'll help you however I can, for sure.
Thanks so much, Jay. It was great to talk to you. And to all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Please make sure that you like, subscribe, follow, all of that. And please feel free to reach out to us if you have a question or something that you would like to hear us talk about. We are available on LinkedIn and all of the other normal places you would find a podcast. Okay.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.